Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, so that impossible to pronounce soup was shushedu.
Good word.
Which is, you would never know, like, that's the nature of Sicily. It's that melting pot. Like, who even knows what language that originated in?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it's traditional to serve it, like, with dried fish and that sort of thing along the side.
Mm. What's your favorite soup for this time of the year? What are you thinking about?
I'm thinking about something probably most of our listeners don't want to make, but I had a soup one time in the autumn in the Rioja region in Spain,
mm-hmm.
While visiting Rioja growers. And it was a fava bean soup with tomato and garlic and a lot of sweet onion and tripe. And the tripe was in the soup, the honeycomb tripe. And you have to like organ meats for that. But I love it, and I love it with the acidity from the tomato. And there's some red wine in that broth as well. And the starchiness and nuttiness of the favas.
Were they fresh or dried favas?
Dried favas.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like it would have to be dried.
Yeah, you always see them in the spring there. And I guess May, June is when you usually see them in Spain. But that's the soup that strikes me the most. So, and I don't know that people... If you want a recipe for that, for goodness sake, email us. ForemanWolf@WYPR.org. And I'll shoot one to you.
Well, we're about to get porcinis, too, I think. It's been an interesting year for local mushrooms.
Just saw the first ones from Seps. So the first Seps from France today. And they were not bad.
So excited.
A little small, but not bad.
Absolutely one of my favorite ingredients to work with, porcinis or Seps.
You ever made a soup with porcinis?
I have. And really, because they just... You know, when they're really fresh, they're really pretty. As they get older, they get a little funky and a little strong. So, you know, it depends on the age of the mushroom, but I like to make soup when they're very fresh. And all it really needs is a little bit of shallot sautéed in butter, and I don't do much of that. The thing with porcinis, they are wild mushrooms, so they really need to be cleaned well. You almost have to rub them with a wet towel, a damp towel, and peel the stem itself so that you're ridding yourself of any dirt. And you're also looking now for little holes because they do grow wild, so they can have worms in them. And
there can be anything in a porcini.
Right. So you really have to clean them well. And then I slice them and saute them until they begin to caramelize because I do want that texture and I do want that bit of flavor. And then deglaze with red wine or cognac. Either way, I almost prefer the red wine. And I really rarely cook with garlic, which I've talked about before. But you know,
it has
in this
its place.
Yeah, in this, oh, definitely, it has its place. In this case, I would butter poach a little bit of garlic. So butter poaching it means it's basically, you know, very gently cooked and very, very low heat, immersed in fat, which is butter. And that way, it's very gently cooked, the garlic, and then I just pull it out, pull the garlic pieces, slices out of the butter, and add it to the pot when I add the cream. So I would saute those shallots, add the mushrooms, the porcinis, let them work until they begin to caramelize, deglaze with the red wine, and then add stock and bring it up to a boil. I would then add that butter poached garlic, a little bit of salt and pepper, and then I would add cream. And I would say probably 25% stock to 75% cream.
What kind of stock do you prefer for porcinis?
Brown chicken and veal, or just straight brown veal. Or chicken, either one, or a combination of the two. Chicken probably is even best just because it's so pretty and sweet. So if you're making a brown chicken stock, that's probably the best thing to use. And then that is a soup that I would puree and pass through a strainer. And I'd probably pass it through a strainer a couple of times. And you do not want the soup to be thick. Now, you could tighten up your pan with a little bit of flour, which essentially, you know, will richen your soup, will obviously thicken your soup quicker than through reduction. And that bit of flour does make it feel better on the palate, I think, and it gives us a little bit of a silkiness that you won't get just from the cream. And I would only add a couple of tablespoons of flour to the pan right before I deglazed with the red wine and added the stock and the cream.
A lot of soups are hard to match wines with. Porcini mushroom soup is never that difficult. It really depends upon how roasted those mushrooms are, how reduced that soup is. But there's such a good deep flavor, and there's always texture to those soups. Even if it's not thick, like, you know, like loaded with cream or tightened up with a lot of flour, as you mentioned, it still always has so much flavor that it's very easy to have a nice glass of a cru Beaujolais or to have white Burgundy, you know, a white Pernod Vergelès or something like that with a soup like that works very well.
What would you drink with the butternut squash, andouille sausage, and white bean soup?
Wine from Alsace. Mm. You know, wine from Alsace or Austria. The that Riesling is definitely the first grape that comes to mind.
Okay.
Because it will have enough, and it will not come across as shrill. It has plenty of acidity to clean that up, and that's a rich texture on your palate. You need good acid to clean it up. You need a little note of sweetness for sure. And I think the little petrol-y thing about good Riesling from these places, drier from Austria and almost as dry from Alsace, is that that there is enough of a mineral thing going on that's inherent, and the alcohols are not high, that they'll have a nice presence with the soup. It's not hot on hot, which sometimes wine can be with soup and is not attractive. But consomme or something with soup, I mean, that's when the next chapter of weather, when all of a sudden it's November and the leaves are gone from the trees and the wind blows through your bones, you know, then what I want is brodo. All of the Italian soups that are based on brodo, and sometimes it's the clean ones, you know, but sometimes it's a brodo that, like, it starts, like there's you make a stock, and then you make the double stock with like one more, like make a chicken stock, a basic chicken stock,
mm-hmm.
and then you take one more roasted bird
and add it to it, right?
Yep. Fry it in a pan,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
all chopped up with the bones, and its liver. And then the stock on it, and then bring that back again, and then just strain that off, clean that up.
That's great.
Super flavorful, and then you put, you know, that's what the tortellini is the famous thing to have in brodo, but it's the really deeply flavored ones. I always want annolini, which are sort of like a double thick, like an Oreo double stuff. It's a very stuffed ravioli. And the filling always has a lot of Parmigiano Reggiano,
okay. And
some prosciutto, and some of that same chicken leg meat ground in there, and some more of the liver ground in there. You know, all of that sautéed and made into a nice force meat. Season it as you want to. It can be grappa, it can be cognac, can be a little bit of a saba, which is a wine must that's sweet and a little sticky is nice in there. But make that force meat and that sort of double thick. And the egg pasta with nice thick edges, with lots of egg in the dough itself. You float about a dozen of those guys in a brodo, like the one I mentioned, that with a lot of flavor. That and a green salad and a nice piece of cheese afterwards.
Perfect.
Very good. And then the wine can just be contemplation wine. The soup warms you up. It satisfies you. You have the green salad, clean your palate. And the cheese is nice. Have a little bread, maybe some cookies that are not too sweet. And that when the world wants to drink Amarone with their meal, and it's too sweet for the meal and too rich, and the reality is a really complex wine from Valpolicella like that, so made from dried grapes, can be fascinating to drink. It often dominates whatever food it's with. Let it be its own thing. I mean, that's exactly for me. If you want to have that kind of a meal that I mentioned, and then have that Amarone to sip at afterwards. Like I said, almost with like a little cookie with raisins or something, or nuts. Mm, that will take care of that chill a little bit.
It seems so.
I'm getting
good. I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
I'm getting hungry. Oh my gosh!
I don't know why. I don't know why. Like Italian, you know, cucina della nonna, that Italian grandmother cooking, the real stuff from home is the stuff that makes me emotional somehow.
Mm-hmm. I understand. We all do. We all have food that we connect to, I'm sure, from family.
No question.
Mm-hmm. And our roots.
All right. So let's reconnect to a southern soup. How about a southern soup?
Speaking of roots. Funny that you say that, because I had to write down chic rab because we were talking about our favorite soups. And some of my soups I've had in other people's restaurants. And then chic rab soup is just one of those things that I've eaten so many times since I first started cooking in Charleston, South Carolina. And there's so many different versions. But in the end... And also because Maryland soup is so important to this, obviously, to our state.
That is the Maryland crab soup of South Carolina.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. That's it. It's chic crab is the Maryland crab soup. They're two totally different soups, too. I was so surprised when I moved up here and had the Maryland soup. And I'd never had a crab soup like that with all the vegetables and the Old Bay and the... You know, the broth-based soup.
There's everything but sailboats in that thing, yeah.
But she crab is really, the idea of she crab is the meat from the female crab, which of course we don't want to take because we want the female crabs to reproduce. Well, we can take a female crab, but not one with roe in it. And so the idea is crab meat, cream, sherry, a good sherry, and a little bit of spices, nutmeg and mace. And, you know, typically you think of a pinch of cayenne, too. But the soup is very, very simple.
The good sherry thing is a big deal.
It
and
is.
The sweetness level of the sherry is a very big deal.
Okay.
It's got to be a pretty dry one with more savory flavors than sweet.
Right.
And I know you always use a good manzanilla that we get that has some age to it.
Yeah, the manzanilla is so pretty.
It's nutty. It almost has like a sea aroma to it. And that's so appropriate for that soup.
I think the work for me working as a young chef, working with sherry in that soup is what led me to love so much when you first brought in the Boal Madeira. Oh, my gosh. That's when I added that to my mushroom soup, which is not the porcini soup that I was just talking about, but it's a very simple button mushroom soup that I make. And I've been making that for years and years, like, you know, 30 years. But because it was inspired by a dish that my cousin, who is a chef, made for my grandmother's 75th birthday many years ago. And anyway, so Boal Madeira is beautiful and sherry is beautiful. So the soup, well, and also in Charleston, if you can follow me, crazy train of thought there. But in Charleston, they often would pour the sherry into the soup table side. And that was pretty traditional in people's homes.
I expected they had sherry in their glass.
Oh, yes.
And sherry to pour in their soup and more sherry in their glass.
Yeah, people.
That's a pretty relaxed
people
community.
People like to drink down there. Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, a hurricane is a reason to have a party. So
I always thought that
it's a great lifestyle.
And reputation-wise, they're better at it in Savannah than anywhere else. So, no, that's a great Southern soup and a great classic.
And I will tell you also, at some point I decided to make Maryland crab soup, just sort of my own version of it. You know, and
it's what everyone does. That's why we had that one program in the summer asking everyone for the perfect Maryland crab soup recipe, and we got
a million different variations,
all kinds of crazy stuff. We also got great ideas, we got wacky ideas. We have to do that every summer, I think.
Yeah,
because I think the wacky ideas and the great ideas are going to keep coming. So what did you do with yours? Your Maryland crab
with
soup?
The soup, I brought in the hard crabs and made crab stock. So, you know, that's just a matter of, you know, basically, breaking up the crabs, sautéing them in a large pan with oil to brown, you know, begin to color them, basically. And so I used almost a bushel of crabs to make stock. I mean, it was a large amount of, it was serious. And then you're discarding them. So it's sort of sad to see all that go, but it makes a great stock. And just a regular stock, mirepoix, carrot, celery, and onion, bay leaf, thyme, peppercorn, a little bit of tomato paste. And I definitely put cognac in there, but which you don't have to do. But so I made a great crab stock. And then, you know, obviously strained it. And I strained it a couple of times. I think I even passed it through a cheesecloth, as well as a chinois, which is a fine mesh strainer. And then added a little bit of Old Bay to it, just a very, very little bit. And then we added back to the soup a brunoise, which is the smallest of dice of mirepoix, carrot, celery, and onion. We garnished it with fresh tomato. I think it was actually even slices of heirloom tomato in the bottom of the bowl, and put lump crab meat in, Maryland lump crab meat in, and then poured the soup tableside. So the tomato was in the bottom, the crab meat, the mirepoix blanched off, and then poured the broth with the hint of Old Bay in it tableside.
So it was kind of Maryland crab soup a la Zsa Zsa.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Whatever it was, it was pretty good.
I don't know how many years we'd have to do the program live asking for crab soup recipes, and someone's going to call in and say they use cognac in the...
Yeah, you don't think that's ever going to happen?
Maybe not.
No.
Maybe
now. Okay, so no cognac.
Maybe now, but...
Or white wine or red wine might work, too.
Yeah, no question.
All right.
No question. That from the Bay, fish soups are great to do. Oyster stew is... That always ends up being this very complicated and overcooked something.
Oyster stew is so easy to make. The main thing is you do not want to overcook those oysters. So I make what I consider a soup base. So I simply saute onions and butter. I add cream. You don't have to use cream, but I do. And I do not reduce that soup. I mean, you do not want to have a thick soup. So really, I saute the onions and butter, add a little bit of the oyster liquor from the shucked oysters, and add cream, I add pepper, freshly ground black pepper, a pinch of cayenne pepper, and just a tiny bit of dried basil. That's me. You don't have to do that. And then, and actually I add a little bit of extra butter. And I really only cook that for probably about 20 minutes just to get the flavors going and everything working. And then I hold that either for the restaurant, we hold it hot, and then we just pick it up with the oysters in it to order. That is the best way to do it. So if you're making it at home, you just, when you're done making your soup base and you're ready to serve it, you just add the oysters to the pot, and
it's essentially
like
really,
literally a minute later, you serve it.
Really, yeah. Attractively lightly seasoned, not reduced.
Correct.
Warm cream,
right,
to poach the oysters in.
Exactly. And they flavor,
and then,
that cream,
yeah,
so quickly.
And then you, for goodness sake, eat it before the oysters overcook in the...
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And I add a...
as soon as they're warm in there, they're ready to go.
Right. And you could
That's
add
when a, you want them. They're tender and fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And you could add a brunoise or a small dice of potato to it if you like potatoes in your oyster stew. And I would add that at the end. I would add those potatoes right before I'm about to add my oysters so that those get hot. Those get hot. That takes about a minute in a hot soup. And then you add your oysters to the pot, cook those about a minute, minute and a half, and then you're ready to eat.
That's another soup that's actually very easy to match wine-wise. A lot of times you think of oysters as muscadet. They're very dry, almost like savory, almost saline white wine from the Melon grape from the mouth of the Loire Valley out in the Atlantic. It's a little bit like what grows together goes together, right?
Right.
Great oysters from out there, and this wine comes from out there as well. Muscadet is never super expensive. There's some very interesting ones. But muscadet is a nice match for the soup as well. It actually lets, because the soup is not so reduced, it doesn't need something thick. I don't think you ever remotely want oak or something that's dense, you know, that has any inkling of tannin to it. Just something clean, and just something clean to show the rest of it off. When we come back on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll have one or two more soups for you and a little chef's challenge tucked in at the end on WYPR.